Hello, this is Jessica Eyes here with Agricultural Economics Podcast. My co-host Ken is here with me also. How are you, Ken?
I'm doing great, Jessica. How are you?
I am good. I'm good. I'm doing well.
Did I see your name in the list of participants in last weekend's Purdue Half Marathon?
You did, and not only was I on the list, but I actually went and ran those 13.1 miles, too.
You ran the whole thing? Yes. You didn't hitch a ride along the way or anything?
No, but Ken, I think you were there also, weren't you?
I was there. I was participating in the slow man's division.
Well, I don't know, because I went and checked our times, and you beat me by 2 minutes.
Well, you know.
I guess I was in the slower man's division.
I don't know. Okay. Anyway, so no ride, no subsidy for you in the race.
No subsidy, but we are going to talk about some subsidies today, aren't we?
I think that's on the agenda. Introduce our host.
Yeah, could you please do that? That'd be great.
Oh, you want me to do that?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, our host today is Professor Jacob Ricker Gilbert. He's been with us for how many years now, Jake?
This is my fourth.
Wow, time flies.
Time flies when you're having fun. Yeah.
That's the length of a presidential term.
That's right.
I know.
I hope I'm not on my way out. Are we going to reelect him again?
We are definitely going to reelect this guy because he's doing really important work. He focuses on issues of agricultural input subsidies and economic growth in Africa, which is an important part of the world. Jake, you want to give us a little background for some of the work you're doing and why it's important?
Sure, yeah, thank you, Ken and Jessica, for inviting me and the nice intro. I didn't make it to the race on Saturday, so.
Did you have any intention of going?
A couple years ago I actually ran in it, but, you know, it's been busy the last couple years with two kids and more work and all that fun stuff. But anyway, in 3 years at Purdue, it's been a blast. My research, as Ken said, focuses mainly in Africa on smallholder agriculture, figuring out ways to boost production, productivity of staple crops, and ultimately find strategies for boosting household income and food security. And, when I travel to Africa probably 3 or 4 times a year for different research projects and outreach projects, I'm always amazed at the changes I see. You know, there's a lot of potential and opportunity in Africa, but also a lot of challenges and, you know, finding strategies, policies that can help farmers is extremely important. And really my main research over the previous 3 years and going back to my dissertation in grad school looks at the benefits and the cost of providing subsidies to farmers in Africa on seeds, improved seed varieties, and inorganic fertilizer, and the issues surrounding that.
I want to just right off the bat ask you, how much of what you see happening here in the United States as far as subsidies do you apply to what you see over in Africa? I mean, do these two relate?
Yeah, in terms of, they absolutely do. Whenever there's some kind of policy, you have to think about the benefits and the costs. Obviously, providing resources to a group of people, there's some benefits, but there's a cost in thinking about the opportunity cost of spending a lot of money on imported fertilizer when it could go to other things. There's some questions about how that, can be done sustainably. And, in terms of subsidies in this country, I think there's questions about the best way to design these programs, how to make them cost effective, how to make them go to the people that need them. You see a lot of similar issues in terms of the research and what people find. What we've seen in several different countries in Africa is the people who perhaps most need input subsidies aren't the ones who get them. Better off households seem to be able to capture the benefits, and to some extent that happens here. There's a lot of parallels.
So you talked about the changes you see there, Jake, and the things are changing in Africa, and we hear more and more about Africa as an important part of the future for food security on a global scale. What are some of the opportunities, maybe even some of the challenges that you see in terms of dealing with food security and agriculture in Africa?
Yeah, I absolutely. Well, I think one thing to say is, Africa is a big place. I think the UN counts 54 countries, so there's a lot of heterogeneity, and you see it you know, when I go to different places, what's happening in Kenya, for example, is different than what's happening in Malawi or what's happening in Nigeria. But I think overall, there's a lot of opportunity, and specific countries have really grown quite a lot in recent years. Countries like Kenya, Ghana, Rwanda, South Africa, while other countries have, you know, lagged behind, like Zimbabwe, you know, of course, the countries that are dealing with Ebola right now. So there's a heterogeneous, you know, set of countries. But generally, I mean, Africa has a young population that can contribute a lot. And there's a vast natural resource base. There's a lot of potential for growth. You know, the coastal countries, you know, that can get access to, you know, international markets relatively easily have a big potential, I think, to be players in the global economy. I think it's a challenge for more landlocked countries that don't have the infrastructure. So there's a lot of potential, but there's a lot of challenges in terms of, you know, number of countries in Africa have population growth rates still over 3%. So that's a big challenge.
How is that a challenge?
Having high population growth?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you can think about population growth as a population as a resource if there's opportunities for them, if there's an educational system where they can learn, where they can find a place in the economy where they can be productive, then sure, people are definitely a resource. If there's not, you know, a clear spot for them and there's not clear growth to absorb this extra population, then it can certainly be a burden. So, you know, the countries where urbanization's happening, a place like Nigeria, a place like Ghana, a place like Kenya, you know, if the non-farm sector's growing, it can absorb, you know, this growing population, and we'll see growth occur. It's sort of like what happened in the U.S. 150 years ago. There was industrialization, people left the farm for, you know, opportunities in the city. Farms were able to consolidate a bit, and, you know, farm productivity increased with new technology, and people who remained in agriculture over time ended up being better off. And that's happening in places where the non-farm sector is growing, agriculture is becoming more productive as well. But there are places in Africa, a place like Malawi, you know, countries like Burundi, some of the poorer countries in Africa, where there isn't really an urban sector to absorb the growing population, and you see farm sizes shrinking, people not being able to have enough resources to, say, invest in improved seed varieties, invest in fertilizer, you know, land gets divided more and more and more, and the situation gets worse.
So where do the subsidies come in?
Well, I think, you know, they fit right into this situation where you have a, you know, growing population in countries, you have shrinking land base, and you start to have situations where you have, say, a family of eight on an acre of land trying to make a living. So it's a response by governments to try to get people to use more fertilizer, boost yields, boost productivity, and, you know, have more food generally for people to eat. And it's a good idea, you know, at the big picture level. It's like any government policy, and a lot of my research is focused in Malawi. It's difficult to implement these programs well because, you know, it's not just about the fertilizer. There's other things that are needed in the production system, like, you know, water, soil, other nutrients in the soil besides just nitrogen and the fertilizer. There needs to be some base level of fertility for the nitrogen to be effective. So if you're, the challenges come in when you're spending all your resources on, you know, one input and not, you know, investing in other things like soil fertility, irrigation.
What do you see, you know, as you're doing your research, and what do you see as like some of the solutions to those problems that you're coming across?
Sure. I mean, so long term, I would say, you know, just importing inorganic fertilizer isn't in and of itself a sustainable solution. If the price of fertilizer in the world market, which is highly correlated with the price of oil, goes up, it can be extremely expensive. So I think long-term solutions need to come from, you know, in terms of directly, you know, boosting agricultural productivity, There needs to be more attention paid to overall soil management. As people continually mine the soil, you know, the populations grow, there's less fallow, less crop rotation, less management of the soil, less intercropping with legumes, which creates problems. So better, you know, investment in soil fertility management, better investment in better seeds that can better use the fertilizer, irrigation. A lot of this comes from better funding for extension, better research and development. Those things are important. But then overall, I mean, things like investing in better statistics so that farmers have some idea of what's actually happening, what's production looking like, where price is going, that's important. And then off-farm opportunities, development of non-farm sector, better educational opportunities at all levels, especially primary, secondary education, so that people can see opportunities outside of agriculture. It's more of a big picture, long-term solution.
Wow, Jake, I hear you talking about investing in a lot of things, investing in people, investing in infrastructure, investing in new technologies, providing subsidies. Where do the resources come to make this happen?
And then also, sorry, I'm going to jump in. You know, when you're working in a developing country, like it's so much harder to apply solutions. So, and I know you've been over there. You're there a few times every year. So, you know, what do you really see as a practical, you know, first step, like Ken said, in identifying amongst all of these areas and actually getting it to work on the ground?
Yeah. So, I mean, priority setting is obviously important. I mean, money has to come from somewhere. You know, so something like a subsidy for input for fertilizer, let's say, is a short-term sort of strategy that can sort of be a Band-Aid to help people going, you know, get going. Some countries, for example, they'll spend a significant amount of money of their budget. For example, Malawi, like I said, I've done a lot of work there, spends on average between 5 and sometimes 10% of their GDP on fertilizer. So that's a significant amount of money that could be spent on something else, on, you know, research in new crops, better varieties of crops, you know, better infrastructure, that sort of thing. They can have payouts in the long run, and that's one of the big challenges, you know, as we're talking about. You can talk about, you know, getting people from one year to the next, which is obviously important, but then how do you break that cycle with long-term investment?
Like a long-term sustainability.
Yep.
Sure.
Yep. And I mean, it's a challenge. It's a challenge getting those long-run investments. I mean, it's a challenge everywhere, getting people who are in politics to think long-term rather than
just the next election cycle. Yeah.
So, Jake, we're sitting here at Purdue University in the heart of Indiana, in the middle of the United States, and we've got a professor who's working in Africa. What's the benefit to our students and our stakeholders here at Purdue and in Indiana from having somebody like you working in Africa?
I'm glad you asked that, Ken, because there's a lot of benefits. I think we need to think of, you know, this kind of work as an investment for the U.S. and U.S. markets in the future. There's obviously a humanitarian aspect, but as I said, there is this other component. As incomes rise in Africa and elsewhere in the world, it's going to lead to more demand for products from the U.S. and Indiana in specific. I like to show this story in my undergraduate class, International Economic Development's the title of the class, how China in the past couple years has made huge orders of soybean from the U.S., basically because their income's going up, they're eating more meat, they're buying soybean to feed their animals. So in Africa, as they grow and develop, you know, demand for things like poultry are going to increase, so that could be a real market for U.S. products. So it's important to think of this as investment in the future. And growth, and it's important to remember, growth in one place doesn't mean decline in somewhere else. So it's about making the pie bigger for everybody.
So we're also focusing on our long-term sustainability well by having you doing these types of research.
I think so. And I think it's important, you know, for students here and people to realize, you know, as you go on in the world, in life, what happens in Asia, Africa, Latin America is going to affect you and whatever business you're in, agriculture, or whatever industry that is. As we get more interconnected, it matters a lot.
That's great. Well, we really appreciate you joining us to talk about talk about these events. It's a nice little change from what we've been talking about these past couple of weeks.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it.